The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor, and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. Here's what's affecting your life, your wealth today. Joining me on the show is Michael Shamish. He is portfolio manager of the West Shore Funds, and he will be joining me talking about the markets, interest rates, bond market, Janet Yellen. Speaking of Janet Yellen, I will be talking about a lunch event that I was part of on Monday. Had an opportunity to actually sit at lunch with Janet Yellen, and we had one-on-one dialogue that I will share with you. Also, a few weeks ago, I was quoted in a USA Today article where I was asked to give input on retirement and how being single is a liability in retired years. We'll talk about that. I'll tell you some of the tips that came from the article and what you need to know. Joining me now is Jerry Silvey, who is Senior Vice President of Commercial and Consumer Banking at First Colonial Community Bank. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Steve, thank you for having me.
Busy time for residential lending, Jerry. What's it been like the last so far this year, I guess, as we are now approaching the midway point of the year?
Steve, with interest rates being still fairly low, inventory levels have come down, so there's a lot of activity in the real estate market. Purchase of homes has been very busy over the last 90 days. Very, very busy.
So as you know, throughout the show, I've been talking about me having lunch. I had lunch with two important people this week. One happened to be with Janet Yellen, and that was Monday. Actually sat at the table with her and got into a little bit of discussion. She was asking me questions as opposed to me normally asking questions of her. I know the audience that I was with got to ask questions to her, but it was interesting when she leaned over and asked me specifically what investors are thinking and asking me. And basically she said, you know, I don't think they like me very much because rates are low. So, and the other one important person was Jerry Banmiller, who is president there and CEO of First Colonial Community Bank, where you work. So, you know, discussion with a lot of folks this past week. Janet Yellen basically saying and giving credit to the residential real estate market, not so much because rates are low, but that was part of her overall theme and message she was talking about, really talking about jobs and finding that there's a correlation between the labor market and residential real estate. Do you find that to be the case? If there seems to be job creation, then lending for mortgages is up?
Yes, I think there is a direct correlation there, specifically in the new home market, because every new home that is built affects, last estimate was over 120 or 130 different industries. For a resale home, I think most people buy a resale home. I think it affects somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 different industries upon the purchase of that home. So I could see that, yes, as a definite push towards more jobs, absolutely.
Where's most of the residential lending coming from in the mortgage space right now? Is it first-time home buyers? Is it folks moving up the zip code? Or is it something else that might not be on everybody's radar?
Actually, Steve, that's a great, great question, because about a year and a half ago, the big part of the market were the seniors and the adult community. Now it's flattened out where we have very good activity in first-time homebuyer areas, which is usually market somewhere between 275 and below. And then we're also seeing the second home market is all of a sudden getting very busy again at the shore areas. And I think it's a product of the rate. I think it's a product that some prices have fallen. And I think people are taking advantage of those opportunities. So it's pretty even right now. We're seeing good mix of business between first-time buyers, adult buyers or senior buyers, second homes, definitely getting more stronger.
Last week on the program, we had the opportunity to talk to somebody on the national level of real estate. And this particular person had done a show, Brian Crabtree. He's in the Atlanta market, and he does a big real estate show. And he was talking about vacation properties and how they've really started to begin the movement where it seems as if that's the next place that he sees a lot of activity coming. And with that, he said, you know, it almost seems like we're back even before the real estate bubble. He sees vacation properties, beach houses, mountain houses being on the verge of a big liftoff here. Are you seeing signs of that?
I wouldn't say it's a huge liftoff, but there's definitely more activity over the last 12 months in the second home market. Yes, there it was very, very flat for a long time. And all of a sudden, in the last 8 to 10 months, we're seeing this, you know, a nice steady increase. I mean, it seems like it's not on a rapid overheating type of situation where like a bubble situation. No, we're seeing a good steady increase across the board in the second home market. Which
that's good though. Those steady increases are what we want. We don't want, yeah, you know, bubbles tend to be, you know, fake, false.
Yes. It's been a fairly steady increase in the second home market, yes.
What has the commercial real estate market been like? Businesses, are they borrowing? Are they pulling back? What's the health now as we shift from the residential retail space into the business owner in the commercial space?
Steve, very good question again. So from the large commercial projects, where strip centers, multifamily projects, apartment buildings, that area seems to have slowed down, obviously, over the last few years with vacancy factors and vacancies increasing and such in the commercial space. Where we're seeing a tremendous opportunity is the small rehab market, buying and selling of homes, fixing them, flipping them. That small rehab construction space, single families in particular, are really popular. There's a lot of people back into that market. As we've discussed, you and I, off the show, you know, we're seeing a lot of that small rehab property situation happening. And some of these properties are blighted. Somewhere, you know, New Jersey's getting very, very difficult foreclosure process, takes a few years to get through the process, so some of these homes are in pretty bad shape, and there's investors buying them, putting the money in, and reselling them and making fairly good money on this right now, good profit margin.
So we heard so much about banking regulation and how it's onerous and how it can mucky up the system, but it seems like it's pretty healthy right now, even with added regulation.
Yes. Well, we're seeing a good steady growth in our space, in our consumer space, our commercial space. Where we play the best is on the smaller level and the community side. So we're in a good run right now where we're getting a lot of opportunities. As you know, the larger banks do not want to entertain loan requests at certain dollar levels. You know, some are saying anything below $1 million, anything below $750, they don't want to take the loan app. They pass on. Where that's where we tend to strive and do our best work is in that smaller space. So it's been a pretty healthy situation for us. But commercially, it was slow for a long time. Now all of a sudden, it's getting very busy for the space that we want to play in. It's there.
Jerry, recently, this past week, in thestreet.com, there's always posted articles. I tend to read and to get financial information there. They did a fascinating article on co-signing and how more and more co-signers are needed today for the younger generation to be able to get everything from car loans to credit cards to mortgages, to student loans. What's your take on co-signing? Have you seen a little bit more in the co-signing need space? And what advice do you give for those that might not qualify but do have family members that qualify? Do you recommend co-sign?
Well, to answer your first part of the question, yes, we are seeing more co-signing activity on loan transactions across the board. Yes, we are. Some reasons this is happening. First reason that we see is that the younger borrower tends to not have either sufficient income or may have a little bit more debt from student loans and such, so they still want to buy that first home, even though the home may just be a little bit out of reach for them. With the support of a co-signer, some loan programs allow us to add a co-signer. It doesn't have to occupy. It could be a mom, dad, relative. We're definitely seeing more of that across the board, particularly in the mortgage space. We don't do credit cards here, but you know, as you and I both have kids, I mean, we're coming up on that. They've got to get their first credit card. They, you know, need it for schooling and other purposes. You know, they need mom and dad to co-sign. That's just a product of advancing and growing up. Do we recommend it? We take it as an extra level of security. At a bank our size, of course, you know, we expect the applicant to repay the debt, but if not, the co-applicant or the co-signer is expected to repay the debt if the applicant can't, 100% responsible. Is it a good thing to do or a wise thing to do? I think a lot of situations are positive that it happens, but you have to know who you're co-signing for. Obviously, that's important, and that's probably a critical element of anybody co-signing. You know, and does it make sense to co-sign? A lot of cases it does. In situations it does. Do you do it for anybody? No. Obviously, you know, there should be a deep thought process there on what you're doing for it and what is the exit strategy. If you're going to co-sign for somebody, how long are you going to be on there before they need to try to remove you from the debt? Is it a year? Is it 2 years? Is it a temporary situation to get them off their feet? So that's what we kind of look at in each file. You know, what's the exit plan? What's the strategy? Why do we want the co-signer? And go from there.
Well, it's interesting because at the table when I was with Janet Yellen, we were discussing lending and how it was a healthy environment. You know, people are able to go and get loans and get mortgages and more so than before, but yet we're also hearing rumblings that there's more need for co-signers. So you really wonder what the true health of the economy is with more and more support needed behind the particular loan process. Let's flip gears a little bit. Reverse mortgages. I know First Colonial Community Bank has dipped its toe into that space. What is the reverse mortgage market looking like? Have you kept tabs on what that looks like coming here locally from your bank in New Jersey?
Yes. It's actually a very good product. It's, again, certain situations dictate a reverse mortgage. Not every situation does. And what we find is clients will come into the bank, as you know, and they want counsel. They want to sit and talk to a lender. We give them that area, and we discuss what may be the best situation for them. And if it is, that's one of the products we have. So the reverse mortgage market is definitely a well-needed product for an individual over the age of 62 years of age. And it makes sense in a lot of different situations. Does it make sense for everybody in every situation? No. But it's definitely a product that is well needed, again, but it's not for everybody. We compare it to a home equity product, and that's actually what it's called through the government. It's called a HECM, home equity conversion mortgage is what they call that in the government space, because they're drawing out equity and they're just not repaying the debt until something happens in the future. Where traditional home equity, as you know, you draw out the equity in that property and you repay it over time. So good product. Again, not for everybody, not for all needs, but you got to compare it. It's just another opportunity to offer assistance to someone who truly needs help.
And Jerry, real quick, where are rates right now for those that are in the need for mortgage? Where are rates currently?
15-year is averaging around 2.875, 2.75 for a traditional 15-year conventional. 30-year is averaging around 3.5%. 30-year fix, 3.6, depending upon credit and equity position, obviously. So rates are fairly good. No complaints on rates, as you and I discuss often. You know, we talk about where the bonds are trading and So rates have been very, very good.
And for SBA, Small Business Administration loans, First Colonial Community Bank plays in that space as well.
We do. We do have an SBA department, preferred expedited lender. So we do handle those very well. And SBA is another product. It's, you know, a government-backed loan for someone who may be starting out. And the government wants them to, attempt to do the business transactions. And that's what we're there for. We're there to lend, to help support that community growth. So SBA is definitely a good way to go.
Yep. You guys helped me out in that space, and, happy you were able to do that for me, a while back. And so, you helped incubate, Cordasco Financial Network and, West Shore Group and other companies. So, thanks so much for the work you do at First Colonial Community Bank. Jerry, thanks for being part of today's program. And, hope rates stay at the point where people can have their dreams and opportunities fulfilled and not have too much overhead and debt. So, Jerry Silvey, thank you so much for your participation and all the good work you do for the people we refer to you at First Colonial Community Bank.
Steve, thank you for having me, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Yep. Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Your Life, Your Wealth. I'm Steve Cordasco, also broadcasting on 990 WNTP in Philadelphia. You can catch me on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/CFNplan. Follow on Twitter at CFNplan. I'm Steve Cordasco. Back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dream? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cordasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cordasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. As I mentioned earlier in the program, I had an opportunity to meet Janet Yellen. Janet Yellen is the Federal Reserve Board Chair. And Janet Yellen is actually the fourth Federal Reserve chair that I've actually had the opportunity to meet. I'll go through that list in a moment, but first let me tell you how it came about. Janet Yellen was scheduled to speak at the World Affairs Council of Philadelphia. So I often, from time to time, get invited to events at the World Affair Council. A good friend of mine and local successful business owner, Raja Bakari, who is very active at the World Affair Council, had asked me to join him at the lunch event because he knows that the topic of conversation was going to be finance. Raja Bakari is a doctor. And he is a graduate from Temple University's MBA program, Fox School of Business, a big donor back to the school. Many of you may know the name Raja Bakari. Raja hosted myself, Michael Smirkanish, Pat Croce, a group of folks at his home when former Pakistani President Prez Musharraf came to Philadelphia and spent a lot of time. So we were actually having dinner with Prez Musharraf. The news was there. There were a lot of people there. And my friend Raza, who's very good friends with Prez, had all of us together. So follow up to that, we became very good friends. Hence, he's asked me to be involved in World Affairs Council and things that they do. So end up going to a luncheon event and happen to be sitting right at the table with Janet Yellen. And you know me, those of you who had followed me for years on radio know my views of the Federal Reserve. And we've done many, many shows on the Federal Reserve. We've had Ron Paul on the program. We've had Griffin on the program, who wrote the book Creature of Jekyll Isle. We've had Jim Rickards many a times on talking about the Federal Reserve, what the Federal Reserve is about, how the Federal Reserve should be audited, and all this kind of stuff. So I go, and here I am. I'm sitting with Janet Yellen, and as her and I greeted each other and said hello, started having dialogue. And at the lunch, she leans in, and she asks me what I do. And I said, well, I help people with their money, their wealth. I help them with their life. I help them achieve their goals. And I do that through three things we do at my company. One is financial planning, making sure everybody has a plan so they know where they're going. Second, investment solutions, so that people who have a plan and want their money to do something for them, earn a return, invest, show them how to invest and what to invest in and educate them. And third, lifestyle coaching, making sure that the decisions they have to make in life, the directions they want to go, the emotional stuff that they have to deal with when it comes to their wealth and their life, that we're able to help them see clearly and create some comfort for them once they're able to see it clearly. She was all over it, fascinated by it. And she says to me, I bet your clients aren't real happy with me, are they? I said, well, why would you say that? Well, interest rates are very low. They're not getting much return on their money. And she does talk like that. She's got a drawn-out way of saying things. They're not getting a very good return on their money, are they? I said, well, yeah, they're not. These are very difficult times to try to eke out good returns. I said, but I'm sure you have reasoning and you have your challenges. And she goes, yes, we do, and I will share them with you. So here's what the Fed's whole objective is, right? So I mapped out what we do. It all starts with planning. And I mentioned to her, I said, and you have your plan. And she said, that's right. You know, the Fed follows a dual mandate plan. And it's this, ladies and gentlemen, and I've said this before, so a little bit of an education of what is driving the Fed behind their decision-making process. We are the only country with a dual-mandated policy from the central bank of the United States. So there's other central banks. Central bank in Europe, Japan's got its central bank. A lot of countries have a central bank. Our central bank is a dual-mandated central bank. That means it tries to achieve two things. That is price stability and full employment. They want jobs and they want price stability. So Janet Yellen begins with, in her speech that she gave that day, talking about where we are and basically a state of the economy and what the numbers show. And I tell you, I could not disagree more with her. And although they opened up open mics where people could ask questions, they only took four questions of a room that probably had 300 people in it. The mics happened to be in the back. I'm sitting in the front at a table with her, so I would have loved to have jumped on it. But she basically painted a rather rosy picture of where we are today. And she was trying to give us some insight of where we might be tomorrow. So she was flirting with the dialogue of potentially having to raise interest rates and talking about, if things stay where they are, of raising interest rates. So let's break it down. Let me give you a little bit of what Janet Yellen was saying when she was in Philadelphia. But keep this in mind. Immediately after Janet Yellen completed her speech, I was on my way back to the office. And literally, by the time I sat my fanny in my chair in my office, which is probably a 10-minute walk from Broad Street, which is where she did her speech, the media was all over what she had to say. And there were a lot of people, I guess they got interviews from folks and sound bites, who didn't like what she said, who have issue with her comments, which was fascinating to me to read all the conflict that was there. Here's what Janet Yellen had to say when here in Philadelphia about the job market.
The economic expansion following the Great Recession has now been underway for 7 years. The recovery has not always been smooth, but overall the gains have been impressive. In particular, the job market has strengthened substantially, and I believe we're now close to eliminating the slack that's weighed on the labor market since the recession.
Do you agree that the job market has been impressive? Do you agree that the economy since the Great Recession has been impressive? Has been moving in the right direction? Like me on Facebook. Let me know what you have to say. Facebook.com/CFNplan or on Twitter right now. Hit me with your comments. At CFNplan if you want to shoot me your comments on Twitter. Or you can go to my website, CFNplan.com. And you'll be able to shoot an email off to me there from the website. I want to hear what you have to say because here we are. She was talking rosy. And this is what I think aggravated a lot of people after her speech in Philadelphia who got an opportunity to hear her. I really should have asked her. I don't know. And the reason why I didn't, I wouldn't have gotten an answer from her. I said, you know, Joe Biden, President, Vice President Biden, and President Obama called you into the White House first thing on a Monday morning. It was not part of the president's schedule for the Veep to be there and POTUS to be there for both of those individuals, the Vice President and President of the United States, to be there. First thing on a Monday morning had to be pretty darn important. Could it have been for them to say, change your tune here? As we're unwinding this administration from office, and that we are in an election season, and negative talk about the economy might hurt the Democrats moving forward? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out what was done at that meeting. But I can tell you this, she seems to be painting a rosy picture. Let's hear what she had to say about price stability, the other mandate of the Federal Reserve. Let's see what she had to say about that in the economy.
If incoming data are consistent with labor market conditions strengthening and inflation making progress toward our 2% objective, as I expect, further gradual increases in the federal funds rate are likely to be appropriate and most conducive to meeting and maintaining those objectives.
So there she goes. Now, Elvis, everything's perfect, right? Her price stability numbers are moving into place. She's got jobs where they want to be, probably not her, but I'm sure the president or somebody on the D side of the table is going to say, look what we were able to do. You got President Obama, who's now formally endorsed President Clinton and has thrown his hat in and said, that's who I'm backing. I endorse Hillary. You better be darn sure Hillary's going to be riding that train saying, keep us in office because look what we've done to help the economy. Now, the flip side to all of this is that when we talk about jobs today, we do a whole segment, I think, coming up on the gig economy. Wait till you hear what is going on in the labor force where people are working, but remember we say they don't have good jobs? They don't have career paths. Is really what it comes down to. They're cobbling together a little this, little that to earn a buck. So what I did was I decided to dig in a little deeper to find out what's really going on in the job marketplace. Coming up, I have a guest who's going to talk about who studies jobs and where we are, especially from millennials who are living home with their moms and dads. The flip side, some retirees that are out there, and even some folks in the middle who can't make ends meet, that are cobbling together work. And that's what it is. It's not a career. It's getting by for the moment. And there's a whole industry out there called the gig economy. People just doing gigs. Bartenders, waitresses, Uber drivers, people buying something a little cheaper, throwing it on eBay for a little bit more. Airbnb. People, I don't know if you know this, but you can go on right now in Philadelphia, Airbnb. There's people renting where they live. They live in a house, and they are renting you part of the house. And they're making a few bucks off of it. But here's what we find out. It's 17% of the workforce, which is massive, that is part of this gig economy. Are you ready for this? It only equals 7% of the GDP of our country. It's not adding anything to the economy. So my concern, and Janet Yellen knows this. Here's the important part you need to know. Janet Yellen is a labor economist. Meaning, anyone who becomes Fed chair is an economist. But they have a certain DNA about them, and they can be labeled. And she's labeled a labor economist. I told Janet Yellen at lunch, I said, you know, I had an opportunity to have a scotch with Paul Volcker. I said, not only did I meet him, we had a scotch together. We shared a little tuna ahi, and he slugged it down with a Dewar's and water. His wife drank a beer. She's from Ireland. He's from Germany. Alan Greenspan, I couldn't understand a word he was saying. He talked in triple negatives. I don't know. It was baffling to me. I couldn't figure out what the hell he was talking about. Ben Bernanke, I met after he was out, and we were on a kind of a lawn over a hotel where he did a speech, and I don't know, he's just like, it was a real struggle talking to him. I mean, he was a nice guy, but he just didn't have a lot to offer. Janet Yellen was very engaging. She was very polite. Out of all of them, Paul Volcker was my kind of guy. We drank scotch together. But number two, I like Janet Yellen. She gave me a hug. She was a nice lady. But is she a puppet now of the administration? Because we can dissect her comments when she was here in Philadelphia. And I can tell you, if she's the labor economist, she's got to see these numbers in the labor numbers. She's got to see that the jobs being created today are not good, healthy jobs. In the end, we'll find out if she's truthful or not, because it'll all be determined whether she raises rates or not. Stay tuned. We got a lot more coming up that'll help shed light on this. Love to hear what you have to say. Facebook me, facebook.com/CFNplan. You can also hit me on Twitter at CFNplan. If you want to send me an email, you can go to my website. If that's the easiest way for you to do it, you can do that by going to CFNplan. That's CFN as in Cardasco Financial Network, plan.com. I'm Steve Cardasco. It's a Your Life, Your Wealth Network. We're broadcasting on 990 WNTP. I'll be back in a moment.
Hey, Rich Dooley here. My friend Steve Cardasco, financial advisor and founder of Cardasco Financial Network, is back with a new retirement guide called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. This guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, how to successfully generate cash flow in retirement, and how to utilize great tax saving strategies. This guide also uncovers the best practices to reduce stock market stress, how to find investment solutions that match your risk tolerance, and how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement. Whether you are taking the first steps to retirement planning and don't know where to start, are in pre-retirement and looking to accumulate wealth, or already retired and looking to preserve your wealth, you should get a copy of Steve Cardasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement, and it's totally free. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, and as in network, plan.com. Go right now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cardasco, broadcasting on 990 WNTP and the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Joining me now is a good friend. He is a portfolio manager of the West Shore Fund and a strategist when it comes to watching the markets and planning. Michael Shamish, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Yep, back for another tour. You are a frequent guest, and really enjoy talking with you on the markets and where things are going. And here we are. Looks like commodities are heating up. Seems to be all the news today, the USA Today, energy stocks heating up for investors. What's this look like? Does it look like we may have seen the worst of times for commodity stocks? And does it look like commodities are now in an upward trend?
It's hard to say whether in an upward trend in terms of like a secular trend, in other words, a longer-term trend. But they're probably off the bottom. That's my view. and they may take a trip back down before they head up in earnest again. And the commodities are really responding to a lower dollar, a lower U.S. dollar, which has been the case now for a little bit of time.
Well, it looks like we may need a lower dollar to help some things going on here in the U.S. I mean, we're hearing that the trend, or at least the cycle over the next few years, would be for a downward dollar cycle.
There's a mixed opinion about it. If interest rates are not raised on the short end by the Federal Reserve, it's likely that will be the case. The dollar had a run-up in anticipation of higher interest rates here, and so far that does not seem to be the case. And as of now, there's little indication that there will be any interest rate rise in the near future.
So with that, as you know, I spent time this past week at a lunch event with Janet Yellen, actually sat at the table and had some one-on-one talk with the Fed chair, and in the Fed chair's remarks and comments, she had mentioned about the tremendous amount of stimulus that has been put into the system through low oil prices and low energy costs, gasoline prices being down. No talk about how the trend upward might negatively affect the economy, but she was definitely talking about the positive side. Can you react to that?
The Fed uses models that of the economy that haven't really worked very well. For years, they've been projecting a better economy. You can look back, and they've been wrong. They, I believe, don't quite understand what is going on in this economy, which has been responding to a severe financial shock from 2008 and continues to try to fix itself, but also is trying to get beyond the low interest rate scenario that has been laid out for it by the Federal Reserve, and also the very high debt levels in the economy. They don't factor that much into their models, but the research has shown, the academic research, there's plenty of it now, shows that very high debt levels reduce gross domestic product in any country that they exist in. Japan is classic of that. I mean, they haven't been able to get out of their own way. They have interest rates now negative. Europe, the 10-year bond rate, bond being the German bond, is down to 3 basis points. That's not 3%. That's 3 basis points, 0.03%. It's virtually at zero, and that's a 10-year bond, and they have negative interest rates on the shorter end of the yield curve. So these rather, what I consider some deranged policies are having a negative effect in that it's causing people to force them to save more, not spend more, forcing them to hoard cash because cash is being is worth more than putting it in the bank. And now there's some fear that that might occur here. I don't think it will, but it doesn't mean it won't, or we won't have a brush with it. So about Janet Yellen, I think these are all well-meaning people, but I believe they are following models of the economy that no longer work. For you gave a good example. Well, the lower oil prices and the lower costs for various things, it has not resulted in a better economy. It's rather a symbol of a poor economy. So they put positive spin on things. I guess they're salesmen to their point of view. And you have to look at it that way.
It was interesting. She leaned in and asked me what type of work I do. And I told her I do financial planning, and I help people with their money. I said we do planning, we do investment solutions, and then we do coaching and lifestyle coaching to help people achieve what they are looking for out of their plan. She says, "Boy, I don't think your clients are real happy with me, are they?" I said, "Well, why would you say that?" And she said, because interest rates are so low, they're not getting a return on their money. And I said, that's true. I don't know if they're directly pointing their finger at you. I said, but of course they would like to have more. And, you know, then I got into a little bit of dialogue about the disconnect between what the true inflation rate is of those people that might not like her very much who are complaining about low returns. So it was interesting where her mindset was. But let's talk about that, the interest rate cycle today, and kind of where we are and how it correlates with the inflation rate. Michael, I know for you and I who talk regularly about the markets, we don't look so much at the Fed to give us our indication of where we are today and where we might be tomorrow. I found it fascinating that so many people would go up and ask a question when it was open mic about trying to get some guidance from her where things are going, a crystal ball, so to speak. We tend to look at more of the inflation bonds, right, Michael? We look at what the market seems to be telling us in the bond space. Can you share a little bit about what indications one could get from the bond market, and specifically bonds like TIPS?
You can see the inflation that is built into what the market sees as inflation by seeing the differential between inflation index bonds and nominal bonds. And that has steadied somewhat depending on the maturity that you're looking at.
Well, let's back up real quick. Explain what nominal bonds would be for someone who might not know that.
A nominal bond is a standard bond. You get a coupon rate and it sells at a yield. It's the kind of bond that everybody knows historically. An inflation index bond has a measure. You get a yield over and above the inflation rate, or in some cases you get a yield below the inflation rate, mm-hmm. depending on how the bond is priced. Mm-hmm. So they actually are priced at a real yield, which is a yield over the inflation rate. So it might be, let's say, 0.3. So if you buy an inflation index bond at a 0.3 real yield, you're getting the consumer price index plus 0.3 for the right.
Is it a pretty efficient market? Would you say there's efficiencies in that marketplace?
It's a very efficient market, and it's a very important market. It's not something that most people know about or understand, but it's a very important market. I think they started in the late 90s, so we have enough of a history, at least in the United States. But in the general interest rate environment, over a very reasonable time frame, let's say over a few years, the 10-year regular bond will trade right around, give or take some measure, around the gross domestic product, the actual nominal gross domestic product. So, for example, right now we have the 10-year yield, let's say, around 1.7%, 1.6%. So right now that bond is essentially telling us that's about what gross domestic product will be on a nominal basis, not a real basis. It's not telling you where inflation will be. So, but that's essentially how bonds have been priced relative to the economy. So bonds are telling you that the economy is not going to be going anywhere anytime soon. And inflation is not likely to be going anywhere anytime soon. Could it be wrong? Of course, yeah. Could it change? Yeah, of course. It could change between now and the end of the year. But right now, that's the projection. And the bond, we have an expression that we say in the business that stocks are for show, but bonds are for dough. In other words, the real money is in bonds. The real pricing is in bonds. And the stock market is really kind of like a sideshow.
Well, it's interesting because Bill Gross, who they call the bond king, right, basically has said, look, if you look at the return on bonds, you're somewhere between 7-7.5% over, and he gave a cycle. And he said, you know, the next couple of decades, you're not going to see that type of return. You might not see much of any return in bonds. So
right.
So where is there opportunity if if one was investing today, where there's always opportunity, right? It's not like there's never not an opportunity somewhere. Where would there be opportunity?
The inflation index funds, I think, are an important part of portfolios, particularly retirement portfolios. I would say you don't generally want to buy them in a taxable portfolio because you get taxed on income that you don't receive. But that's by the bond being worth more as consumer price index goes up. So you don't get the cash flow right away. You get it when the bond matures, but you get taxed on it on an ongoing basis. So you don't want to own those in a taxable account. But in a retirement account, I think they should be a core portion of everyone's portfolio. And you need to buy them long enough, 10 years and out, in my opinion, to get the maximum real yield out of them. They're not without risk. They're still bonds. But in the end, you will get the inflation rate plus whatever yield you purchase them at. That's one area. But emerging market debt and emerging market equity over the longer term will probably generate much more return than American stocks, large capitalization stocks, kinds of things everyone is buying right now. And stands a much better chance of protecting you against inflation than the stock market will. But there aren't a lot of opportunities globally at the moment. What Bill Gross said, he's right. And interest rates are at not decade lows, not century lows, but 5,000-year lows. There's virtually, since records are kept from hundreds of years ago and even thousands, there is no record of interest rates globally being this low. Now, what's this all about? We'll find out in time, but it's probably about the global, overriding global force is that of deflation, too much productivity, too much production capacity, mainly in the places like China and India and places like that, and too much debt. And it would be nice to grow your way out of it or inflate your way out of it, but it's not likely to happen that easily. And so what you have are the central banks and the Janet Yellens of the world saying, well, we need 2% inflation. We have to get to 2% inflation. I don't know where they come up with that number, and I'm not sure that makes any sense, but basically they want to pay you nothing for your savings and then depreciate them by 2% a year. Essentially tax you on your wealth. Mm-hmm. So that's taxation without representation. And I think people should know that. That's essentially what they're saying to you. You put money in the bank, you're going to get, I'll call it 0.25%, but we want inflation at 2%. So essentially, an unelected body is determining that your wealth will be taxed at nearly 2% a year. I don't know why Americans stand for that, but they should know more about that.
It's timely to talk about that because here in Philadelphia, they're actually thinking about pouring soda in the Delaware because of taxes. They're taxing soda and sugary drinks now, just passed. And, you know, Boston had its tea party, and they say Philly is going to have its soda party. So we'll.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, yeah, they wanted to put a 3% soda tax. And
but at least the elected representatives are doing it, and you can complain to them.
Right. Well,
what's happening with the Fed is by trying to get to 2% inflation and paying you nothing on your savings, they're taxing your wealth, and you don't have anything to say about it.
So at least with the soda tax, Michael Shamish, we know what the soda tax is, right?
Right.
And
you know who to complain to.
You know who to complain to, and there are people complaining. They complained enough that they whittled it down to 1% in change, but people can see that, right? They hear the soundbite, they hear the news. But the Fed is different. Explain the difference in what the Fed is doing from taxation without representation.
What the Fed is doing is attempting to get inflation to 2%. But and at the same token, not paying you anything on your savings. In other words, you have your wealth stored in cash and in other forms of savings that essentially pay nothing on your interest. Call it 0.25%.
Right. Now, the government would tax that. So let's talk about how the government gets its tax out of inflation. So explain that one. Inflation's at, let's say,
3%. Well, no, what they're doing is they're reducing the value of your cash savings by the amount of inflation less the amount they're paying you on your cash.
Right. So where does the government get its piece of that?
Well, the government doesn't get much piece of it, but what they do is by getting inflation up that high, it allows them to raise taxes to buy inflationary means, in other words, through incomes or other forms of inflation, while at the same time paying people nothing on their savings.
Hmm. Interesting.
The issue is a wealth tax, and this is where they're going. They can't tax income because that has to be done by Congress. They can't tax capital gains because that has to be done by Congress. But they're taxing surreptitiously. They are telling you they're attempting to tax your wealth. And by whittling the value of your savings gradually and subtly, and this hurts people who are doing what good people should do, which is save. They're essentially taxing the saver. And, of course, funneling the money goes funneled elsewhere and supports other forms of speculation. It's a bad policy, but that's what they're doing.
You give us a lot to think about, Michael Shamish. We appreciate the time here on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, and love to have you back soon. Keep up the good work, and you're doing a great job over there at the West Shore Fund. So every day's a battle, though, isn't it?
Every day is a battle. It's hand-to-hand. It's hand-to-hand combat, and that's and with your only weapon is what you have between your ears. And
that's right.
It's,
And sometimes you wonder if we're in the middle of a baton death march, but we're forging forward and still standing. Michael Shamish, thanks for joining the show. Appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find me. Go to Facebook.com/CFN Plan. You can also follow on Twitter at CFN Plan. This is the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, also broadcasting on 990 WNTP. I'm Steve Cordasco. Back in a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you have a sound retirement strategy? Have you taken the time to sit down and write a plan for achieving your retirement dream? Sadly, most of us spend more time planning our vacations than our own financial future. I'm here to tell the Delaware Valley a name that most people probably already know. Steve Cordasco. You've been listening to Steve for the last 25 years. You've been reading his articles in the Philadelphia Business Journal, Forbes, TheStreet.com. Steve Cordasco and his team have just come out with a new guide for retirement planning called Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy right now at cfnplan.com. That's cfnplan.com. The guide is packed with helpful tips like how to make a retirement plan work for you, generating cash flow in retirement, tax saving strategies, ways to reduce stock market stress, investment solutions that match your risk, how to bring comfort and clarity to your retirement, much, much more. And now for my Hugh Hewitt listeners, I strongly recommend you get a copy of Steve Cordasco's guide, Your Plan to a Successful Retirement. Get your copy now at cfnplan.com. That's CFN, N as in network, plan.com. Go now to cfnplan.com.
And welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. I'm Steve Cordasco. Now, as I said, coming up next is how being single in retirement can be a liability. And it's interesting because a few weeks ago, I got asked to give some comments for a USA Today article that was going to showcase what it's like being single in retirement when it comes to your money and your wallet. And when I was talking to the reporter who was looking for some feedback, Alyssa Arsler, I said, Alyssa, look, I said, you know, one thing you have to remember is that at some point you got a high probability, all of us, that we're going to be single in retirement. Think about that. It's true. Very few of us who are married we'll take our last breath at the very last moment together. Specifically, statistically, women have more longevity than their husbands. Hence, in most cases, women live longer. And so it's being showcased of what it's like being singled in retired years. And in 30 years of helping people doing planning and navigating their wealth, I see it a lot. And I guess the reason why USA Today had called me is because they want to get insight. on what types of tips and things that we can do to help those prior to being singled in retired years, or those that are newly single in retired years, or those that have been living a lot longer than they thought they would be living single in retired years. So let's go down and talk about some of the tips and some of the things that we covered when it comes to you and your money in retired years. One thing that I gave with regards to being single is that those that are at younger years, keep in mind that when it comes time to save and accumulate, you want to pay yourself first. What that means is you have money going out into your retirement plans or in savings plans before it actually hits your pocket. See, Uncle Sam likes to get paid first, right? So you see the tax line on your paycheck. Social Security comes out of there. You got all these line items in there. Everybody wants to get paid first. You need to do the same for your own dollars. Pay yourself first. The other thing I said is that there's a high probability you'll be single in retired years because not everybody lives, not everybody passes at the same time. So one thing you want to keep in mind is that there are blind spots when it comes to your money, your wealth, and having to make emotional decisions. And when you have a spouse, sometimes you're able to bounce it off the other person. You're getting insight. You're communicating. Now, I know you're going to say, we fought about it all the time. Kind of like making my own decisions. But it's difficult. You really wonder when you're doing something, whether you're doing it right and you're worried about a mistake. So you have to build a team. For example, at Cardasco Financial Network, we have a team. We have certified financial planners, some that specialize in tax. We have certified financial planners that specialize in the insurance space. We have certified financial planners that specialize in the Social Security and planning aspect of helping people with their money, or those that specialize in insurance and determine whether you need long-term care or whether you have too much life insurance, or whether or not annuities make sense for your investment solution. We have investment experts. That's a team. But you also need a team outside of that who can understand the emotions that you're dealing with, loneliness that you're dealing with, and how to deal with that and the blind spots that come along with it. So you need that group, and it's important to have that group around you and surround yourself with that group. Another piece of advice is make sure that if you are lonely, that you're getting support either through family, and if you don't have much family, that you're part of a community that might be able to offer that support. A lot of that comes with planning. For example, if you're in a big house, you need to downsize, you might want to downsize to a place that's got other people like you, and you can be part of something and included in something. Some of the basic planning steps that came into the USA Today article: shoot for 10 to 20% savings of your income. Number one. Number two, avoid individual stocks. Invest in funds, mutual funds, instead of individual stocks. If you seek financial advice, make sure that that the person or group you're dealing with follows the fiduciary standard, that they have to operate as a fiduciary. Most insurance people don't operate that way. Most brokers don't operate that way. So you really want to make sure that they're a fiduciary, which means they're operating in your best interest first. So those are the tips. The USA Today article was posted. You can look up Steve Cardasco, USA Today, and you can get the full details of my comments in the USA Today of what it's like to be single in retirement. Hey, thanks so much for joining the show. I'm Steve Cardasco, broadcasting live on 990 WNTP and the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. You can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/CFNplan, or Twitter @CFNplan. Have a great week.
Thanks for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows are reproduced as podcasts and can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cardasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.